right. This is Pure Decking for August the 9th, 1945. We are back after our summer hiatus. Tonight we have on the list Sard, Suave, and Analog. What's everybody drinking tonight?
A little bit of rum and Coke.
Not terribly different.
Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid. You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
No, man, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
You don't know what's been in it. I've got a little bit of probably about two shots of 151, and then filled the rest of the glass with Sprite. So, what about you? What about you there, Sard? You got anything interesting in the cup?
Oh, the good old standby gamers, you know, right hand man, Mountain Dew.
Just Mountain Dew.
Oh yeah.
So we're all getting smashed, and Sard's gonna get hyper. Perfect. So
we have a lot of work to do on the site, so I just figured I'd hype the fuck up. And, yeah, I'll just do it all in one night, one crack.
That's true. We are back, obviously, from our summer hiatus, which we're just going to take every summer off. We did it last summer. Admittedly, that's because I was really fucking sick. But, you know, we're just going to do that. We did it this summer because I had shit to do. Just to kind of go over what I was working on while we were off, I reworked the back end to the station, actually, the way we actually broadcast and schedule stuff to play on the stream. And it's much cleaner now. It's much more efficient. And it's a solution that doesn't require I give people who want to help us with the station VNC access to my home network. So I'm rather happy about that.
We all really, really want that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a paranoid person, if you haven't noticed. But anyways, the cool thing is it's simpler now, at least for running the station. It can be a little bit more complex to do shows, but I'm working on a solution for that. I'm building a system to replace the relay functionality that we used to use the whole station for. So it's cool though, because the old broadcast box can be a source for the new one, which I think is kind of badass, actually. We've moved to an open source project. It's called Liquid Soap, if anybody's wanting to look up how we're actually running the station. It's actually more of a scripting language than anything else. There's no interface on this thing whatsoever. If you want an interface beyond just hammering out scripts and throwing them up, is to you have to write your own. So to that end, I was actually looking at writing a BBS door. Because, I mean, anybody can write a web front end for the thing, and I've written web front ends for tons of crap at work, and it's just like, you know, I want to do something different. I want to do something a little bit more interesting than, you know, yet another web front end with, you know, whatever interface, you know, whatever theme thrown on the page, or hack up a WordPress theme to make something look cool. But, so I was thinking a BBS would be fun.
Hell yes.
I mean, you know, Telnet menuing system.
Yeah.
And if nothing
else...
Nice
ASCII art also.
ASCII art, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely want to find some good ASCII art, make the thing look badass. And if nothing else, I want to be able to administer my internet radio station from a goddamn Commodore 64.
Nice.
Now, in all seriousness, though, a Telnet BBS you can hit from anything. Like, I got a 486 laptop that I can hook up with a serial line and be able to administer the radio station from.
Oh, that's excellent.
I mean, you know, old school, like old Windows CE PDAs. I mean, you know, everything, anything you can administer it from, which
that's great.
You know, and I want to move the feedback system into it. I want to put a chat system in it. I want to rip the shout box off the front page because I'm tired of deleting spam out of it. And I know Sard told me the same thing, which means I was deleting spam out of it every once in a while. Apparently, Sard's been doing it as well, so that's twice as much spam as I thought we were getting. It's like, holy hell. So I want to move to a situation where if you can't figure out how to work a BBS, and honestly, what automated spam bot's going to know how to work one of these things, you can't talk to us. Because let's be real, these things aren't that hard. But, you know, just a little filter on the bullshit. So... And, you know, we can set up a super elite area, which was actually just for handling the scheduling of the station. But, you know, why not, right?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. And, you know, like, anybody who does actually get in there is going to feel like they've accomplished that much more. And it's even though it's super simple to do, it still will be giving that kind of feeling of
it's just got that coolness factor.
Exclusivity, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's certainly that, and you know, you have to remember too, a BBS. I mean, that's a user model, a user interface model that's so far removed from what people are used to today. I mean, I know people at work that if I sat them down in front of one of these things, their eyes would cross and their nose would bleed. I'd be like, what?
Yeah, so, it's cool. It's just a throwback.
Yeah, so why not? Other quick note I wanted to make, show news. I'm looking to I've mentioned this on the show before. I'm going to spin Digital Dojo off as its own video series. I was hoping to actually have that done during the hiatus. Didn't happen. And the big reason it didn't happen is some of the hardware I need to set up my lab the way I wanted to set it up is actually was the old broadcast box. It's one of the best pieces of hardware for what I'm wanting to do. So I needed to redo the station back end so I could reclaim the hardware to put in the lab, and it just kind of got all messed up. And, you know, it's, at some point you just say fuck it and go play World of Warcraft, right? So
but, that's what I do.
So, or Team Fortress. But anyways, so that's still going to happen. I'm still going to have some Digital Dojo segments on the show, but they're going to be shorter because I'm hoping to have more of these discussion topics, which we're getting ready to jump into on the show, as opposed to Digital Dojos, because whereas I can sit here and talk about some program for hours, I'm not during the last several Digital Dojos, especially the ones where we really got in depth, it's me talking and everybody else just kind of sitting there. And as cool as it is to go over this stuff, I don't think it makes for a good radio. So I'm thinking move to a video format for that because it's easier to see it, for one thing. And with these discussion topics, we can get more people involved in the actual conversation, so it's not me sitting here, you know, reading a program manual and everybody else, you know, asleep. So,
hey, I valued those naps.
Well, you know, you got to give them in when you can, right? So, but actually,
toasty.
There you go. I miss doing that too. You can't tell you how many meetings I've been in at work. I was like, I really wish I had my soundboard right now.
Nice. Just so you've become too reliant on that thing, man.
You have no idea. You're sitting here in this meeting with, you know, people selling you help desk software, and you just want to so bad.
Or it's you should put a little one together.
You have the no idea how tempted I've been to set one up on the phone or on the iPad and just have it ready to go so you can be in a meeting and, you know, right when they're talking about how wonderful their software is, just let out a... because that's so handy. And
hilarious.
I actually did that in a meeting once. I pulled up the instant rim shot on a laptop and just kept it handy. And, you know, we reached over, muted the call, played that, unmuted the call, and just listened to everybody else in the room try not to die laughing. Because the vendor just made some retarded claim that's like, oh, yeah, we're the best in the industry, and everybody else who tells you different is lying. It's like, yep, sure. So
that's hilarious.
It's amazing how many vendors always talk about how they're wonderful and how they're... It's like, of course you're telling me about all these awards and everything. If you didn't win them, you wouldn't be telling me about them. So
yep.
Anyways, not to bitch about my job. I actually quite enjoy my job. But anyways, moving on to our discussion here. So obviously, the internet is becoming more and more monitored. And when we get into the news stories, you know, later, it's very obvious. So I was thinking, what are some alternative comms? And also working on the BBS stuff for the site got me thinking about this tool, about this as well. So, you know, you think about it, what are some alternative methods of getting a hold of your group or your clan, your guild, your social network online? I mean, how many people are so reliant on Facebook and Google email and Skype that, you know, if these things were to just go away tomorrow, like if you know, Facebook just... And really, if you think about it, what is Facebook except a giant fucking BBS? They've got door games, you know, Farmville. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got, you know, a messaging system. They've got private messaging and a place to upload and download files, except they restrict it to photos. So,
right.
You know, what is Facebook except a giant fucking BBS, which is hilarious when you think about it. But
yeah, that's very true. I never thought about that.
You know, I mean, what happens if that stuff goes away tomorrow? Well, a lot of the people who still manage the old school BBSs, the dial-up ones, think they're ready to go. It's like, well, we're still running FidoNet, and we still got our modem pools. It's like, well, great, but most other people don't.
Yeah.
I mean, now we were talking about this a little bit before the show. I personally haven't seen a new computer come with a modem in a very long time. Now, Analog told me he's still seen them in some laptops.
I was just going to mention that, yeah. Some
rare
laptops still.
Well, I mean, more business laptops, right?
Actually, my laptop, it's only two, three years old or so. It actually came with one.
Well, you know, I was just looking, and my red laptop that I'm using for the show right now actually has a modem in it. I wouldn't have known because it's under a little plastic cover, and it's fairly well hidden. But it does, in fact, have a modem in it. So, I mean,
but
maybe...
You know, like,
go ahead, Swalf.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you know, like, it either way, like, even if you don't have a modem, it's probably not a bad idea to look into getting into something like that. Like, just hop on, like, Deal Extreme or something, pick up a cheap USB modem. I'm sure you can get them for, like, pennies now, almost. And, just play around with it, see what you can come up with.
Well, I mean, you almost wonder if it's going to be, like, you know, trying to get, you know, SIM RAM or, you know, 8-bit RAM these days. It went, you know, it got super, super cheap. Now it's super expensive to get that kind of stuff because nobody's got it anymore.
This is
right,
true.
It's a rarity. So, the only problem also, though, I mean, you can find modems really cheap now, but, like, when Warps was first tossing around the BBS idea, I was like, hell yeah, you have to make that available so people can actually dial into it. So
except nobody's got landlines.
Yeah, who has landlines anymore? Everyone uses their cell phone. That's the other problem with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. You could probably call up AT&T or Sprint or I don't even know who the other phone companies are anymore and get an actual landline set up fairly cheap. I know when I was using DSL, they wanted to add voice service and it would have been like, I don't know, $10 a month maybe. So getting a landline is not a problem, but everybody's getting rid of them and just going to cell phones.
Yeah, this is very true.
And also, depending, if you're in a newer building, especially apartment buildings, or someplace they've recently ran the wiring to, you may not even get a real phone line. It might be trunked to voice. Like, I was thinking, my office, I don't actually have a phone line in my office. I've got Ethernet that's for the phones. It's its own network, the VoIP. You know, the VoIP's kind of, I think it's actually a VLAN, but it's its own network. And, I'm wrong. It's not a VLAN. It's its own network because we do the power over Ethernet for our phones.
Okay.
So it is, you know, it's its own network, but it's still Ethernet. It's not a real, you know, POTS phone line. And modems don't work very well over VoIP. So.
Yeah, I was going to say you need a.
Yeah.
Analog line.
Yeah, so that you know, you got to find one that says it'll work with a fax machine, and even then you got to set your rate real low. So for the BBS, maybe not so bad, but trying to do anything else with it is going to suck. Now,
right. After
that, I got thinking about, well, I'm still waiting on my router because I ordered one to build a pirate box, but what about pirate boxes? People are building these things. It's not very widespread, but they're easy enough. They're not terribly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And Suave, I know you were telling me just before the show started when you were looking at the show notes, you built a pirate box. You just got the thing in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This is something that I really like this aspect of hacking because, like, it's really easy for anybody to set up. Like, really, if you know a little bit about computers and get your hands on one of these routers, you can set it up to run a pirate box. Like, you literally just go through step one, do this, step two, do this. Do you want to have, your own version of 4chan? Okay, well then do this. Reboot, and you're good to go. And, you know, even if something goes horribly wrong, and you have to go, like, reflash the firmware or something like that, there's all kinds of forums and people who've already had these issues. And it's so easy to just go find your answers. You really just have to know how to use Google. Or any other search engine.
So,
but
go ahead.
Yeah, I really like the idea of it just for sharing information because, you know, like you're saying, like yeah, everything's getting more monitored and everything, but also like you really got to think more about like bandwidth caps and stuff like that. Like that's a big issue.
Right.
Yeah, I'm seeing more and more bandwidth caps instead of less and less, which really just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, like, there's a lot of other aspects of this, too. Like, for example, you know, I'm in an apartment building, and I'd like to get my neighbors using mine so we can basically just use it for, you know, like, sharing files and messages and stuff like that through everybody in the apartment building. I think that would be pretty useful.
Sure. Well, you know, and, you know, something to think about with pirate boxes, and this is the same with old-school BBSs, is they were very local, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, well, at the time BBSs were going strong, long distance fees sucked. So, you know, you couldn't exactly call New York and get on the BBS there. I mean, with the internet today, everything is so, I mean, you get on Reddit or whatever, it's all so spread out. Or they're only talking, when they are talking about things that are local, they're usually talking about, you know, your major metropolitan centers, you know, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, LA, that kind of stuff. So, you know, it really kind of sucks when you're in flyover country or Canada. because...
Well, I'm in one of the biggest cities in Canada, so it's not quite so bad, but I have lived out in the middle of nowhere, and I know how it is.
So, and you know, I'm not saying I live in a small place, but comparatively, you know, the local stuff going on in the major cities seems to dominate these social sites because that's where most of the content's coming from, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's not local anymore like old school BBSs used to be, but pirate boxes are. And I got thinking about an idea. Now, I had some other stuff in here, but I'm just going to skip that. I'm going to go straight to my idea. So just ignore that other crap in my show notes. The idea I had was, what if you took something like a pirate box, and you might not, you don't even have to call it a pirate box, you can change the name, put up your own interface, whatever. And then, so you run a pirate box. Now, pirate boxes are mobile, so they don't really have a set address anywhere. Now, you could probably set up I2P or give them some sort of a static identifier if you went and reserved an IP for it, so whenever you got the thing on the internet, it would have an IP. But they really don't, right?
Yeah.
So, because they're mobile, they move around, and they're usually not going to have an internet connection unless you do something hokey with them. So, you know, what if you took something similar to the old school FidoNet, which, for anyone who's not familiar with that, FidoNet was a way of, you would take, they would maintain a list of BBSs, and you would move messages from one BBS up into a FIDO node, and then the FIDO node would distribute it out to other BBSs in the list. So, you could have two people making local calls into their local BBSs talk to each other through FidoNet. Now, it would usually take a couple of days for the messages to go back and forth. You know, this is kind of a precursor to modern internet email. But, you know, that they could have these conversations across FidoNet and get news across FidoNet because what it was BBSs calling BBSs, right? Bulletin board systems.
That is cool, dude. I never heard of that.
Oh, dude, it's still going. Go look it up.
Wow.
So I got thinking about it. What if you were to write some software? Now, there's all kinds of engineering problems that need addressed with this. So don't pick me apart too hard here. But what if you took something like a pirate box and wrapped it up with a messaging system? Maybe it's running an old school BBS and using some modification of FIDO. Maybe it's, you know, taking the 4chan style interface and wrapping up, or maybe a more traditional bulletin board like a PHBBB and syncing it, you know, maybe even over Tor I2P so you have some privacy with maybe a central server somewhere in the, you know, maybe in the darknet, maybe not, especially if you encrypt everything. Or maybe do like FidoNet did and maintain a node list so that when it gets online, it can search out others in its nodes and sync up. And then that way you could have pirate boxes, you know, these offline wireless systems, because if you think about it, if you're going to build this kind of underground network, it has to be on a technology everybody has. Well, everybody's got Wi-Fi, which is why pirate boxes are the way to go. And they could sync up their messages and maybe even files to an extent, because internet's obviously not going to go away, right? I mean, it's like, you know, even if the thing's monitored all to hell and locked down. You know, they sell it like they sell TV today. Where it's like, well, you've got your Facebook package, you've got your Google package, you've got your 4chan package. Yeah, I can't actually see any ISP selling that one. But anyways, I'm just opining here. But You know, so, you know, yeah, there's ways on the net. You can use the less monitored services, you know, pick some game that's not very popular and use it as a back channel. You can, you know, obviously set up your own private encrypted servers. You can use Tor, you can use I2P. But, you know, to an extent, these things are just going to flag you, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you had this system that would just kind of connect up, you know, every once in a while, maybe using a coffee shop's Wi-Fi or something, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, exchange its packet and pull down a packet from the server, the node list, or however you want to do it. I mean, I think a non-static mesh would be the way to go. Like, lots of different servers.
Oh, yeah.
So that it's harder to take something like this out. But you'd still probably need a tracker of some sort or a node list or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That way you could have people, you know, totally underground. Because you can't monitor something like that. You just can't. I mean, what are you going to do? Get the guys from the Olympics who go around with the Wi-Fi finders finding unauthorized Wi-Fi networks? I mean, give me a break. But they're actually fucking doing that, looking for people with Wi-Fis and shit, right?
Oh, yeah. So, well, at the Olympics, yeah. Like, it's not the Olympics organizers. It's actually the company that's providing the Wi-Fi. They have exclusive rights to provide the Wi-Fi, so they're going around making sure nobody else is doing it because that's their business.
That's crazy to me because
it's
like, wait a minute. It's a publicly licensed band of airwaves. You don't own the band of airwaves, I guess.
Oh, yeah, but like, you know how it is with the Olympics and products. Like, you know, somebody tried to give all the Olympics they weren't allowed to do any advertising or anything like that, so they went and gave all of the athletes these headphones. I can't remember what company it was. But all these athletes are running around wearing these headphones, and it turns out they're all actually breaking the rules for the Olympics because these aren't authorized headphones. Because it's essentially product placement.
You're right.
And, you know, it's a different company. I think it was like Panasonic or something like that had paid like multiple $1 million to have exclusive access. So, like, it sucks that, you know, you're not allowed to use this specific product. Well, it's because somebody actually paid $1 million to actually have their products placed.
Yeah, Sard just posted a link. I'll add that to the show notes, actually.
Got sidetracked on that. It is actually a completely side thought. Talking about distributed networks and sharing all that information and everything like that, there's actually what's called a mesh net, or... like, I'm sure you're probably going to touch on this, but it's basically like a distributed network of all of these different nodes. And, you know, of course, they all just link together, and everybody who can access one of these nodes that's connected to all the other ones, you're on this like local internet.
Right.
And there's a great, great resource on, it's actually a subreddit on Reddit. It's called /r darknet plan.
I highly recommend. I thought that one might come up, especially talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
I've been keeping an eye on that one for a bit. A lot of their ideas are bunk.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, they're throwing around ideas.
No, that's true.
And, you know, that's what's important. And, you know, all it takes is, like, one guy. Like, really, they have a bunch of people who don't have any technical skills throwing around ideas. But they're getting more and more people interested. Like, I just saw, like, you know, a programmer just hop in, chime in, and say, hey, I am totally down for this. I'm going to dedicate all my time to moving this forward. And all you need is, like, 3 or 4 guys with some talent to actually kick in a bunch of time, and you'll really see a project like this take off.
Well, I mean, it's kind of why I wanted to throw out this idea of these, you know, using a Wi-Fi node and then syncing it up FIDO style. Just, I mean, because you got to have some method of keeping these things in sync, right? And
one of the downfalls of the meshnet is, like, really you have to have enough people with nodes that they're all going to be kind of linked together. Like, you know, if you're out on your own, you're the only one at the node, it's pretty much useless.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
That's the problem with mesh networking is the range of Wi-Fi is not that great. You know, 250 feet.
Right. I wanted to set up a pirate box, but I haven't just for that reason because I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but you can send
Wi-Fi. You can send Wi-Fi a couple miles if you want, but you got to have... like some high-end equipment, and it's got to be line of sight, and it's basically a straight line. There's not like wide area broadcast or anything. But like, you know, the city I'm in actually has a mesh net, but it's pretty much only downtown. Like, there's a bunch of places downtown that have it, but that's it.
Well, our police and fire have a mesh net throughout town, but I think if you piggybacked on that, they might get upset. So,
yeah, I bet.
But anyway, so I wanted to throw the idea out here of maybe doing this Fido system of syncing up pirate boxes, because if it was, you know, think about it. If it's a box you carry around in your bag all day, right, maybe change batteries once or twice whenever necessary, or just, you know, use rechargeables, whatever, however you want to do it. So you take this, this pirate box or a similar system, and... you'd be able to sync them up over the internet over something I2P or Tor, at least encrypted with, you know, something. Freaking TrueCrypt, pick your poison here. But that way you get the same kind of trick as FidoNet and the old school BBSs and kind of this underground network, and you're not stuck, because it's not like the internet's going away. Because the other thing is, I've got a story now about how not having his Facebook account is suspicious in the news stories. So, do you have to maintain a clean online presence? Do you have to kind of lead this online double life and have have your Bruce Wayne be on the internet and be on Facebook, and then have your Batman in the pirate boxes? I mean...
Well, absolutely. I think everybody should do that. And the main reason behind that is getting jobs. Because, anytime you want a job, your employer is going to at very least look you up on a search engine. And if you don't have anything on there, very worst, or best, they'll just have no impression. Worst case scenario, they'll think,
you're hiding sort of something. You're not sitting there telling me everything about yourself online. You must be hiding something. So
exactly. So I think it's a really good idea to have a presence on there that you've tailored to, show off what you want to show off.
Sure. Well, I'm screwed with G15, but hey, whatever. But
but you know what? That's actually not that bad. Because, you're not making any crazy claims or anything like that on here. You're not...
Really? Have you not listened to Shoot the Noise? I've said some pretty radical stuff on there, although admit, if I'm asking about that, I can justify it. No, I was trying to start conversation, but it...
Oh, yeah, and, it really... any potential employer or anything like that isn't going to spend a bunch of time sitting and reading what you're doing.
Well, especially...
they might listen to, an episode, but, yeah, they probably won't even know that. They'll just know, oh, okay, well, he built a radio station. Awesome. No, that's all that they're interested in.
True. So, anyways, I'm wanting to get off here and get on to the news because we're getting about a halfway point of the show. But just to wrap it up, just a couple of points. Sard sent me a link to BBS, the documentary, which was a documentary that Jason Scott did. And I actually met him at DerbyCon last year. Cool guy. Nice guy. Well, maybe not nice guy. Cool guy. I liked him. How about that? he was a bit – he could be abrasive, I think, but I liked the guy. How about that? And he did this documentary on BBSs, which I've been watching actually because I've been doing the research on setting up a BBS for G15. So I've been watching that to get some ideas and just kind of get up to date on the history of these things. And because I'll admit, I did not get into the BBS scene as much as I would have liked. When BBS was going strong, I didn't really have a modem, and I couldn't get my parents to buy one. I didn't have any money. I was five. I wanted to get into them, but I just, I didn't have the stuff to do it. And by the time I got a modem, the thing to be on was, AOL. So, I kind of missed the BBS scene. I mean, I was in them a little bit after that. I still dialed a few of the ones that were still around up, but I didn't really... I didn't get to dig on them as much as I'd like. It was kind of dying by the time I really started to look into them. So, and plus, too, everything at the time was network. So, and internet. So, but, so I've been using that to catch up. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes there, Sard. And, I saw in the text chat, he was asking Suave about your pirate box. If you want to talk about that real quick before we move on. Suave.
Oh, sorry, I had myself muted. I wasn't actually paying attention to the chat. But as far as the box that I got, I ended up picking up, it was TP-Link MR3020. It's a really, really tiny little box. It's maybe 3 inches by 3 inches by an inch or something like that. It's just tiny. Doesn't have a built-in battery or anything like that. But, it's got network attachment. It's got USB. Just charges via USB cord, little 5 volts, that's all it needs. Sorry, not charges, but is powered by. So you can just use any like little cell phone backup battery or any 5-volt power source, you know, a Minty Boost or whatever you can get your hands on. And it's crazy simple to set up, you know, just like follow. It maybe took me 20 minutes to get going from opening the box to having a working pirate box. So it's one of the easiest things I've done, and it works great. I'm going on a 3-hour bus ride where everybody pulls out their laptops and tablets, and I'm going to have that thing running the whole ride. If I can get any hits.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a perfect way to use that.
Yeah, he's actually
absolutely.
He's actually got the same router I've ordered, and mine just hasn't shown up yet. So
we haven't even discussed this at all, and we both have the exact same gear coming in.
Well, it's the one to get, isn't it? I mean, I was going to... Well, I've got this whole idea in my head of how to... I got to wait on the hardware to show up before I start doing this, but I was going to use an old external hard drive and a Minty Boost, as you said, because I've got one already made. And I was going to use that to power the thing and rig it all up. And it's probably going to look like a bomb detonator by the time I'm done, but hey, whatever. So
that's actually one thing I really want to do with mine is make it so it doesn't look like a bomb. Because... Like,
that's hard, actually, when you think about it.
You should have to worry about, but really, you should worry about it because, like, any like home wired up gadget or anything like that, it's seen by the wrong person.
They get
really excited. They're going to call
the
bomb squad, and then you're going to lose your gear. And you know, like I couldn't care less if they call in the bomb squad because you know it's not a bomb; it's nothing bad.
But they won't take the risk. They'll blow it up. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And I don't want my gear destroyed.
So. Anyways, moving on to news stories here. So, anyways, first one up, this is kind of fun. It's from ZDNet. When Microsoft shipped its release preview of Windows 8 in June, it announced that the default browser, IE10, would have Do Not Track enabled by default. That action unleashed a heated debate in the Tracking Protection Working Group of the World Wide Web Consortium. Good God, that's a name. To the advertising and analytics companies that make up the tracking industry, this issue is an existential one. If the default browser in the world's most popular operating system is set to disallow tracking, the effect would be profoundly disruptive to companies that live and die by the ability to follow users around the web. After much discussion, the working group agreed that Do Not Track could only be turned on by a browser if that decision reflects the user's preference. The result was a consensus by the working group that a browser, technically a user agent, should not enable DNT by default. Today, Microsoft answered those critics by saying it still intends to enable DNT in IE10, but the final released version will make one concession, according to Microsoft Chief Privacy Officer Brendan Lynch, who announced the decision in a blog post. And his post was, DNT will be enabled in the Express settings of Windows 8 setup experience. There, customers will also be given a customized option, allowing them to easily switch DNT off if they'd like. Microsoft says anyone who goes through the Express setup will know without question that they're agreeing to enable DNT. And then again, the quote was, customers receive prominent notice that their selection of Express settings turns DNT on. But in addition, by using the customized approach, users will be able to independently turn on and off a number of settings, including the setting for the DNT signal. Okay, I'm going to stop reading this right now because essentially it's the, you know, this group from the, you know, W3C bitching that Microsoft was going to turn this thing on, and they flip-flop back and forth. And Microsoft basically decided, well, we're going to put it in the dialog box that we're turning this thing on, so that, you know, should count.
Right.
I think it's hilarious that these people are fighting over a user agent string flag because I don't know about you guys, but I doubt any of the advertising companies are actually going to honor this thing.
This is true.
There's no technical enforcement. And, you know, and I don't know about you guys, but in my line of work, if you don't have technical enforcement, I mean, you have nothing. You know, it's like, yeah, well, the policy says, it's like, well, great. Who reads the actual fucking policy? And seriously, it's a text flag in your user header or in your user agent string. It says, you know, do not track. Well, great. These companies are going to ignore that, especially the really annoying ones that, you know, do your pop-ups and fly-by-night operations, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, even though they say they honor it, you know they're going to store it somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Same thing with just like the do not call list, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
All that stuff is BS.
So it's just hilarious to me that all this hubbub over something that ultimately is going to be ignored because, And even if you, you know, people are saying, well, if they don't honor it, they'll end up having government regulation come in and force them to honor it. Yeah, sure they will. People pass government regulations all the time. You don't see the Pirate Bay getting shut down, do you?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
So okay, great. You pass a government regulation. Okay, fine. I run my tracking company out of, I don't know, Sealand.
Yeah.
You know, well, your laws exactly don't it. Apply. I can still follow everything everyone does.
Yeah.
So, which, speaking of oddball things run out of strange places, anybody else see the Kim.com video where they raided his house?
Yes.
I didn't watch it, though. Is it worth watching?
They don't show much of the raid. No. They kind of go over the room.
It's mostly helicopter cam.
Yeah. There's not actually that much there. They're just pointing out that the cops beat him up a little bit, even though he wasn't resisting. That's about the biggest thing in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, this next one is from Forbes.com, and the writing in it is terrible. So, I've cut and pasted the most important bits out of it, but again, the writing in this article is bad. So, anyways, the sudden dramatic advent of social media enabling technologies into our lives seems to be causing some mid-digital life crises. Really? God. Not only has Silicon Valley developed a guilty conscience about addicting us to screens, we the users are starting to question how technology is changing us, making us fat, making us... Okay, blah, 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 blah. Fuck. Okay. I used to say that if you're not on Facebook, it's possible that you don't exist. I think it's time to update that. Courtesy of Slashdot, Facebook's abstainers will be labeled suspicious. Slashdot flagged a German news story. Now I lost my place. Slashdot flagged a German news story in which an expert noted that mass murderers Anders Breivik and James Holmes both lacked much of a social media presence, leading to the conclusion, in Slashdot's phrasing, that not having a Facebook account could be the first sign that you're a mass murderer. Oh, for Christ's sake. So if you're not posting everything you do online, you know, you must be a mass murderer or a terrorist. That's a tad extreme. Sir, go ahead.
Who's reporting this?
Some reporter from Forbes who doesn't know how to write very well because it's all first person and...
At least it's, you know, it's a sensation piece by some reporter.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Homeland Security news release.
Well, I'm reading it because it's actually got an important point in it. It's just, like I said, this thing's badly written. So,
right.
Here we go. Where was I? That's a tad extreme, but I'm seeing the suggestion more and more often that a missing Facebook account raises red flags. After a woman found out via Facebook that a man who poked her in real life had a long-term girlfriend, she turned to digital manners advice giver Farid Manju and Emily Yoff of Slate to ask whether she should tell the girlfriend. So what, because she got a poke on Facebook, she thinks it's cheating? My God. It's not just love seekers.
Well, you know, poking.
Yeah, well, they'll. It's not just love seekers who worry about the lack of Facebook account means. Anecdotally, I've heard both job seekers and employers wonder aloud what it means if a job candidate doesn't have a Facebook account. Does it mean they've deactivated it because it was full of red flags? Are they hiding something? So they're saying that, you know, if you're applying for a job and you don't have a Facebook account, that actually can hurt you. But anyways, so... I'm going to quit reading this because it's so badly written. I just can't read it out. They're making the point that a lot of people are starting to see a trend that if you don't have a Facebook account or an online social presence that's easy enough to find, that it's like, oh, you're trying to hide. You're trying to hide something. It's like, well, maybe I just don't feel like posting everything I do on a fucking website for God and everyone to see. But, you know, that apparently is going to be an issue. So no takers on this at all?
All I can do is shake my head.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say, man. My brain, ow.
Well, I can kind of see the point. I can see, you know, it's like, oh, well, this person's not letting us see what they do in their private hours versus this person who does. I mean, that might be an issue when you're trying to get a job.
Well, it's BS. Yeah. When you're working at work, what does work have to do with your private life?
I don't disagree with you at all. I'm just kind of playing the point here.
I'll tell you how this is going to work out. It's pretty much you know, any smaller company, any company where it's just like one HR guy or something like that, they're not going to give a shit if you've got this. But what is going to matter is, you know, like you go to like some big corporation or
somebody who's
like
got
that,
an HR policy.
Yeah, it's going to be their policy to check your Facebook account. And if it doesn't meet certain criteria, they're just going to outright disallow you from working there. And, you know, like that's how it's going to work out. So it really, it's just, it's the bigger places that have these policies that you're going to have to watch out for.
Well, you know, I kind of wonder, in my mind, if I was hiring somebody, I would think not having a Facebook account would be better than having one full of them, you know, pictures of them drinking and partying and doing the douchebag pose. And I would kind of want to see somebody who didn't have one versus somebody who had one full of stupid shit.
Yeah.
So
like I said before, don't do things you don't want people to see. One, two.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to see a lot of people probably do the whole hot coffee thing and start having frivolous lawsuits come up because of this, because they got discriminated against.
Yeah.
And so yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's just something to come up, and it kind of relates to our topic earlier. So. It's like, you know, should you maintain a fake online presence? And I guess you should. Next one up's from Wired. Yeah. The federal government may spy on Americans' communications without warrants and without fear of being sued. A federal appeals court ruled Tuesday in a decision reversing the first and only case that successfully challenged President Bush's once secret terrorist surveillance program. The case effectively brings an end to the plaintiff's ongoing attempts to hold the executive branch responsible for intercepting telephone conversations without judicial authorization, a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals wrote. The case concerned a lower court decision in which two American attorneys who were working with the now-defunct Al Harman Islamic Foundation were awarded more than $20,000 each in damages after their lawyers, and their lawyers, $2.5 million in legal fees. Good God. After a tortured legal battle in which they were proved they were spied on without warrants. They sued under domestic spying laws Congress adopted in the wake of President Nixon's Watergate scandal. The government appealed their victory, and the appeals court Tuesday dismissed the suit and the damages. John Eisenberg, the lawyer for the two attorneys, said he may request the court to reconsider its decision with a larger panel of judges. This case was the only chance to litigate and hold anybody accountable for the warrantless wiretapping program, he said in a telephone interview. As illegal as it was, it evaded accountability. The San Francisco-based appeals court ruled that when Congress wrote the law, this is the part of the story I care about. When Congress wrote the call regulating eavesdropping on Americans and spies, it never waived sovereign immunity in the section prohibiting targeting Americans without warrants. That means Congress did not allow for aggrieved Americans to sue the government, even if their constitutional rights were violated by the United States breaching its own wiretapping laws. Under this scheme, Al Harriman can bring a suit for damages against the United States for use of the collected information, but it cannot bring a suit against the government for the collection of the information itself, Judge M. Margaret McCohen wrote for the majority. She was joined by Judge Michael Daley Hawkins and Judge Harry Pergeson. Although such a structure may seem anomalous and even unfair, the policy judgment is one for Congress, not for the courts. So if I'm understanding this right, some law that they wrote under the Bush regime apparently trumps the Constitution.
That's what it sounds like.
That's the way it reads.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does.
I mean, I'm all for them going after terrorists and people who are going to be problematic. I mean, let's be real. If you're going to plant a bomb, I'd rather see the FBI take you out. But, you know, this whole, well, no, you can't sue the government. Now, the way they wrote the opinion, it sounded like if they didn't get a warrant, they still couldn't use it in court. But saying that, well, no, they didn't waive their sovereign immunity, that you know, even if their constitutional rights were violated, doesn't Constitution trump any law passed by Congress barring an amendment to the Constitution? Maybe I just don't understand law, but come on.
No, I don't know American law all that well, but that I thought the Constitution was like that was the go-to guy for law in the U.S.
I also thought that was the final say, but maybe I'm just being naive about the way our government works anymore. So I thought it was interesting how they pointed out that it's like, well, no, they can't use it, but you can't sue them for collecting it.
Oh, well that's okay then.
Yeah, yeah, because they're not going to use it, but they'll use it as a lead to get something else on you, but, you know. So, again, you know, we're talking about, you know, I'm you got to be careful here because the politics of it get reared very quickly because my politics actually go the other way, but I don't like the idea of the government just spying on everybody. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely.
It's like, I'd like to see them take out the bad guys, but I don't think you have to, you know, recreate 1984 to do it. So,
exactly. I mean, that's how it seems like it would begin, the whole brother thing. Sure, they can listen on to everything, but
yeah,
I mean, they say they can't use it, but you know, it's used depending on the severity of it.
Well, like I said, I mean, it's a little confusing, but it's just interesting saying, oh no, this law trumps your constitutional rights, so you can't actually sue the government because they didn't put a line in the law. It's, what? So
yeah.
Okay, next story up. This one's from Torrent Freak, and you know, this is just a good way to get yourself good and pissed off. Last week, thousands of Demonoid users feared the worst when their beloved site disappeared from the internet. Though many thought that the site had been busted, they were eventually relieved to hear that it was only a massive DDoS attack. But today, the roller coaster ride. When was this written? This is written Monday, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The roller coaster ride plummeted to new depths, with confirmation coming out of the Ukraine that the DDoS was just the beginning. The site had been busted by the authorities. Colocol is the largest data center in the Ukraine and the place that has been the Demonoid's home in recent years. But in the middle of last week, in the wake of the DDoS attack, the government investigators arrived at Colocol to shut Demonoid down. Investigators have copied all the information from the servers Demonoid and sealed them, an anonymous Colocol source confirmed. Some equipment was not seized, but now it does not work, and we were forced to terminate the agreement with the site. So, their government came in and shut it down and forced them to terminate the agreement there. So, as reported on Torrent Freak following our discussion with Demonoid's admin last week, there were suspicions that the site may have been subjected to some kind of exploit or hack in addition to the DDoS. That version of events is now confirmed by the Colocol source. Shortly after the DDoS, a hacker break-in occurred, and a few days later came the investigations, the source said. But aside from busting the site, which is the biggest BitTorrent-related raid in recent memory, and one that has taken out one of the world's largest torrent tracker site combos, there's a rather large international sting in the tail. Despite general opinion that Demonoid did not contravene Ukraine law, especially since it blocked all Ukrainian IP addresses to avoid upsetting the locals, the site still attracted the attention of the authorities there. That, according to a source in the country's government, is all down to the United States getting involved. And here's the important bit. A source inside the Interior Ministry has confirmed or has informed Kommersant that the raid on Demonoid was timed to coincide with the very first trip of Deputy Prime Minister Valery Kotarskovsky. God, I feel like I'm making that name up saying it like that. this person's trip to the United States. On the agenda, copyright infringement. They busted and shut down Demonoid as a gift to the United States government to start open their negotiations.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Also, I heard rumors of a raid going on in Mexico.
Yeah, I think they got that just broke
today. Yeah, they said there were arrests in Mexico today.
So,
not only did they shut it down, but they probably got the guy.
So, this is actually back when Demonoid was shut down the first time, I kind of warned people against going back to it because it got shut down, then reappeared in Canada. It's like, sure, stay away from that. I thought it was being run by the feds at the time. Now, because I mean, if I was a fed, that's what I would do, right? Go and shut the place down, then take it over so you could start collecting IPs of people and start, you know, getting your list of names, right?
Oh yeah.
But I mean, it's like that story that a couple of weeks back, which I've seriously thought about covering on the show, except I didn't want to dig up something that old, where the judge had ruled it was okay for the police to take your cell phone if they arrested you and call up your buddies impersonating you. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a couple of weeks old now, so I didn't really have room for it on the show, but I kind of wanted to talk about it.
Not know about that one.
Yeah, so I you know, okay, I can understand if the website's violating your laws and all that kind of shit, but they literally, I mean, this is obvious. They busted this site as a gift to the United States government. That's like
oh, yeah.
Drug dealers bringing in the rival's head in a box. I mean, come on, man. That's fucking nuts.
Oh, yeah, it's bad.
So, anyways, is this my last story for tonight? No, I've got two more. This one's fun. It's from Washington Post. Skype, the online phone service long favored by political dissidents, criminals, and others eager to engage in communication beyond the reach of governments, and everybody else who likes free phone calls. I like the way they characterize it in the story here. Has expanded its cooperation with law enforcement authorities to make online chats and other user information available to police, said industry and government officials familiar with the charges. We actually talked about Skype when they were re-architecting. Surveillance of the audio and video feeds remains impractical, even when court issue warrants, say industry officials with direct knowledge of the matter. But that barrier could eventually vanish as Skype becomes one of the world's most popular forms of telecommunication. The changes to online chats, which are written messages convoyed on, so the IM part of Skype here, result in part from technical upgrades to Skype that were instituted to address outages and other stability issues since Microsoft bought the company last year. Officials of the United States and other countries have long pushed to expand their access to newer forms of communication to resolve an issue that the FBI calls the going dark problem. Microsoft has approached the issue with tremendous sensitivity and a canny awareness of what the issues would be, because they've worked with the government before, said an industry official familiar with Microsoft plans who, like several people interviewed for the story, spoke on the condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to discuss the issue publicly. The company has a long track record of working successfully with law enforcement here and internationally, he added. Of course they do. The changes, which give the authorities access to addresses and credit card numbers, have drawn quiet applause in law enforcement circles, but hostility from many activists and analysts. Authorities have had for years complained that Skype's encryption and other features made tracking drug lords, pedophiles, and terrorists much more difficult. Jihadists recommended the service on online forums. Police listening to traditional wiretaps occasionally would hear suspects say to one another, "Hey, let's talk on Skype." As opposed to just avoiding the long-distance charges with it, but okay. Hacker groups and piracy experts...
Hold on, I just want to interject there. If you're listening in to, or watching in on any text chat on the internet anywhere... You'll see people saying, "Hey, let's talk on Skype."
Yeah, I know.
I was playing Minecraft the other day. I saw somebody say, "Hey, let's talk on Skype."
Must be a drug dealer. Must be a drug dealer. In just the last paragraph of the story here, hacker groups and privacy experts have been speculating for months that Skype had changed its architecture to make it easier for governments to monitor, and many blame Microsoft, which has an elaborate operation for complying with legal government requests in countries around the world. So, yeah, remember a couple of months back we talked about how Skype had gotten rid of the supernodes concept and everyone was, you know, talking through a data center?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I can speak for everyone here in this chat room that we all saw this coming. Once Microsoft bought Skype, we knew right off the bat they were going to fuck it up.
Well, that's the thing. Why are they attacking Skype? If you want to wiretap somebody, it's the same way you've always had to do it. Get something on their computer. I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me the logical way to go. Attack the endpoints, not the encrypted channel. But nope. We can't have that. We can't make it hard. We can't actually have to do work. So we have to destroy the encrypted channel. Well, great, because you know the cat's out of the bag on this one, right? Encryption exists. I mean, I can take a Linux box, put SSH on it, and set up a server that's totally encrypted, that most law enforcement would have a hell of a time of ever seeing what was going on it. I mean, for free, with just old hardware, like some old laptop off the shelf, right?
Sure.
And, I mean, it would be more secure than Skype. So, let's be real. I mean, okay, fine, you might take out some of the dumb ones, but, I mean, you've got to attack endpoints if you want to see what's going on. That's how you have to do it. So, this bullshit of making people put backdoors in their software is just a bad idea. So,
I agree.
Speaking of backdoors in your software, this one's fantastic. And this is from a couple of different sources. So I took the one from, They're all reprints of an AP story. A new Google search experiment lets Gmail users see relevant emails alongside regular search results on Google.com. This is fantastic. Dubbed Gmail in personal search results, the new service is available now in a field trial for users who sign up on Google's search experiments website. Although Google says it won't be able to accommodate everyone, the author was able to sign up and activate the feature in just a few minutes. Google doesn't search your Gmail account every time you run a web search. Instead, it offers to show Gmail results for certain types of queries, such as brand names and locations. When Google has Gmail results to show, a box on the right-hand side of the screen says who the messages are from. You can then expand this box to see the snippets, and from there you can jump into Gmail to roll the whole thing. Okay, just to summarize here, because it goes on and on. What Google is playing around with is making it so if you're signed in and you search for something, it at the same time searches through all your Gmail and will show you relevant results on the side. Now, that's not so bad, because you have to be signed into Google for this thing to work, right? But,
right.
You know, of course, the first thing you read, this, you know, all the headlines on this are Google adding email to search. And it's like, wait a minute. You know how many passwords and other kinds of crazy ass shit go across people's email accounts?
Yeah, that's what, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, how is this useful? Why the fuck would I want my Google searches to bring up anything from my email?
I don't see how
that would be helpful at all.
Well, I mean, you can just go in and search through your old email, right? So they're just kind of hooking them together. But it's,
well, you know,
you've got to be careful with the way it reads, because it doesn't sound like that's what they're doing at first.
But you know where this would be useful is if you're for some reason using your Gmail account for business. Because then that might actually be useful for figuring out. Like, for example, my work email address at work, I constantly need to use the Outlook Express search function, which sucks, and it's slow as hell, and I don't enjoy using it. But if there's a Google search feature, I would definitely be happy to use that, because it would probably be a lot more streamlined.
Well, that's the thing. You can already search your Gmail inside Gmail.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Like, you can already do this. What the hell?
I'm afraid
what
it's
the hell is this?
I'm afraid it's a precursor to them saying, oh, well, if you check a box, which will be checked by default, you'll let other users on the public internet search your email box. And it's like, that's
oh, dear God.
I think that's where they're going with it. Because that's what they did with Google Plus. Is, they first set up Google Plus and they started trying to integrate it into search, and then they made it so Google Plus searches will their Google Plus results will show up in regular Google searches. Not all the time, but they do. And
yeah.
To my knowledge, it's the public posts, but still, I mean, mm-hmm. Are they going to do the Facebook thing and reset your security preferences back to public every 2 months?
Yeah, right.
I mean, come on. So, anyway, so that's enough bitching about that. I'm going to go into the final, I'm going to do a Digital Dojo just real quick, even though we're running long here, but that's okay. I can cover this one quickly. So,
me love you long time.
Okay, so for Digital Dojo tonight, I thought I would talk about Cubes Linux, which just put out a release candidate. Now, I've played with Cubes before, and it's Q-U-B-E-S, and he's got a blog at Invisible Things, theinvisiblethings.blogspot.com, which Cubes OS is cool. What this guy's done is he has built a Linux distribution that runs Xen, a virtual machine hypervisor, and has virtual machine templates built right into it. So when you run it, you'll get standard issue Linux desktop, but you can fire up a couple of virtual machines, and it'll kind of do it for you anyways, and it wraps it all up in a nice little interface. And it lets you run different programs and different virtual machines, but it's seamless, right? It's all in one X Windows. So it's very clean. It doesn't look like you're running three or four virtual machines. You just got one desktop. And then the windows will have different colors in their window borders for which virtual machines are in, green, blue, red, whatever, right? So the idea is it provides you isolation. So you can do your banking in one virtual machine and your social media in another virtual machine, and then you're embarrassing porn in another virtual machine. And the websites that you're looking at in your social media can't see your banking information. Or by the same token, your social media can't see, you know, your embarrassing porn. So if you actually click that one, you know, plus one and like button on your porn website, it doesn't, you know, because you're not logged in that virtual machine. You're logged in the other one. I don't know how big of a problem this is. I'm trying to think of a scenario where this kind of application isolation is useful. Yeah. If you do manage to get a keylogger in one virtual machine, it doesn't get the others. It just gets the one that the keyloggers are running in. So it's a cool concept. I really enjoy the concept. It's for the paranoid. I mean, it's not...
That's what I was going to say, man. That's a little cumbersome, if you ask me.
Oh yeah, and this is totally something you could do once you get the concept of using, you know, a handful of virtual machines to kind of isolate one from the other. You could do the same thing with VirtualBox or with VMware, and just using the seamless mode and running two or three Windows virtual machines or Linux virtual machines or whatever, right?
Right. Right.
So I mean, there's no reason you couldn't rig something up like this on your own, but this is nice because it's all in a pre-built package. And yeah, you've got to be fairly paranoid to run something like this. And it's also really specific on its hardware. You have to have a processor that has the virtualization, the VTX instructions.
And yeah, it makes sense because you're running three or four of them. It's going to need that.
So you need that. And it really wants an Intel graphics card. For whatever reason, apparently they were having problems with the NVIDIA drivers. And they haven't even bothered to test it on ATI. Now, apparently, it's all the open source drivers are bundled into things, so it should work. But I know they were saying they had problems with NVIDIA cards. So, like I said, it's an interesting project. I like the concept because I could see this being very useful. But if you're already running Linux, your chances of grabbing, you know, your standard issue keylogger or drive-by download go down substantially just because they're targeted at Windows, because that's what most of their user base is.
Right.
So I'm not saying there's not viruses for Linux. Don't misunderstand, but there's only like, 12 of them at this point. So
the question I have, though, is can you assign separate NICs to each instance?
I know you can by hand in Xen. I don't know in Cubes because I haven't. When I played with Cubes, it was on a machine that only had one NIC. So I know with Xen by hand you can, but I don't know how well that's exposed in the Cubes OS.
Are you worried about like a man-in-the-middle attack or something? Or
I think he's thinking more along the lines of you're running your laptop and maybe you're at work, but you've got a Wi-Fi card so you can be on your work network in one virtual machine and on, you know, a Wi-Fi network in another virtual machine, and that way your traffic's isolated from one to the other.
Yep.
I see. So that way I can watch
porn at work.
There you go.
Perfect.
And that way it doesn't show up in the traffic logs. I don't know off the top of my head. I know you can certainly do that if you roll your own using, you know, VirtualBox or VMware.
Right. I've done it with a VMware.
And wait, so you're saying you've watched porn at work?
No comment. Just kidding.
I know. I was just going to say,
where are the crickets?
I just had to throw that in there.
No, but I have isolated it that way, you know. At one point in time when I actually had a physical desk at the office.
No, I know, because I remember working with you on that.
Yeah, it's a very useful tool. So if there's already an OS set up that where it makes it even easier and everything's integrated, that would be nice.
Well, it's not like a live CD. This is something that has to be installed, and it really wants a specific set of hardware. So the utility of it is cool. I love the concept. I really do. But I'm not sure something like this is ready for prime time, and this certainly is not something you're going to hand your average user. So anyways, so that was, you know, Digital Dojo. I it was something I knew we could kind of blaze through on that one fairly quick. It was kind of weak, but, you know, what are you going to do? So anyways, now that I can tear apart my old broadcast box, I'm going to get the lab up and going because I needed some of the hardware out of that. And hopefully we'll start getting the Digital Dojo video segments up and going. I'm hoping to get 15, 20-minute segments up. And I've got to figure out how to do the video streaming so you guys can see my screen while I'm working on stuff. You know? I haven't quite figured that one out yet. But There's lots of cool though. There's lots of ways to do it. I'm half thinking just run VNC and tell you guys to, you know, keep your hands off the keyboards. But
yeah, that's one way of doing it.
Or maybe even let you type shit. I don't know. I mean, whatever. But so anyways, always listen to the stream. We are constantly updating it. We're constantly looking for new music to add. And actually now with this new system, we're going to be looking for new DJs. I would love to get some people live DJing. So obviously, let me get a hold of us. Use the feedback form on the site while it's still there. We'll eventually replace it with the BBS. But, you know, you can also email me, morps@galaxy15radio.com. And I'm looking for DJs. And, as long as you play music that either you have permission to play from, like, the author or it's open, because we're not getting, like, any licenses. We're not buying licenses from anybody. It's all – there's no money involved in Galaxy 15. So – you know, BMI can go suck it, essentially, because we're not playing any of their music. We're playing all open Creative Commons and stuff we have permission from the author to use. So, right. So if you're going to DJ, you have to play that kind of stuff. Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays, which I think they gave yesterday a miss because I think it was RU's turn to man the shrine to the crocodile guy. Steve Irwin, so no takers on that bad joke, really? Okay.
crickets.
Right. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7, whenever somebody can find BSV and bat him about the head till he does one, because I know he hasn't done one in a while. Always keep up with the Galaxy 15 radio site, and we still have the Twitter handle, which is linked into the site, so whenever we update the site, it posts on the Twitter. Of course, the feedback form and the shout box, while they're still there, we're probably going to be pulling those. So that's pretty much all I've got. Unless anybody wants to throw anything else out, I'm going to hit play on the music here.
The hell out of here.
Right.